The Forsyte Chronicles by John Galsworthy, dramatized by Elspeth Sams. With Dirk Bogarde as John Galsworthy, Sophie Thompson as Dinny Cheryl, Paul Daneman as Sir Lawrence Mont, Dorothy Tutin as Lady Mont, and Amanda Redman as Fleur Forsyte. Episode 22.
October 1931. England, deep into a depression, was going to the polls. In Condeford, as in every constituency in the land, voters were being exhorted to save the country. How this was to be done, no one bothered to explain, for the simple reason that no one knew.
Miss Cheryl! Oh, beg pardon, your ladyship, I should say.
That's all right, Betty. I'm still a Cheryl.
That you are, miss. Always will be.
I've come to see if you'd like to be fetched on polling day.
That's a kind thought.
We're all hoping Mr. Eustace Dornford will be elected.
Dornford?
He's a good man, Betty. We need people like him in Parliament.
Catholic, isn't he?
The Labour candidate's an atheist, Betty.
Like old times, Claire, isn't it? Talking at bedtime.
Dinny Cheryl, unlike her sister Claire, had not spent the day canvassing.
Does anyone know what will save the country and what won't?
Though she would, of course, like all her family, be voting for the Tory candidate.
The moon looks cold.
You're not acclimatised yet.
I'm glad of this election, Dinny. It's taken my mind off things.
What about Ceylon, Claire? Have you thought any more?
What's the good of thinking? Jerry will do something, but until I know what.
Was it so very dreadful out there?
I enjoyed it at first. Then I wondered if I was enjoying it. Then I knew I wasn't. Then I hated it. All in the space of 17 months.
You will be careful, darling, won't you?
Oh, I'll be careful.
That young man, Tony Croom.
Don't worry, Dinny. I've had all I want of sensual love. These days I'm as cold as that moon.
But he is in love with you.
I can't help that. I didn't vamp him, despite what people might say.
I believe you.
3 weeks at sea, and he behaved like a perfect gentleman. There was one evening. He came to my stateroom to look at photographs. I know people talk, but I swear he didn't even try to kiss me.
I think I feel a little sorry for him.
What Tony needs is what we all need, a job.
Were you serious about looking for a political secretaryship?
It seems a better bet than hats.
If Eustace Dornford gets in, you might try him.
You sat next to him at dinner. What did you think of him?
Oh, nice. Decent. What the man in the play called a Tory socialist.
He's attractive, don't you think?
Is her heart still broken? Can we talk of these things?
Attractive? Yes, I'd say so. He'll fall in love with her, won't he? Any man would. Of course, he may already have a secretary.
Let's get the election over first, Dinny. Then we'll see. What on earth are you doing here?
I've got to see you now and then, Claire. Otherwise, I shall go batty.
But to come here...
I know. I'm sorry. Don't be cross. You look so lovely.
I can't have complications, Tony. I've got to find my feet.
Let me kiss you. Just once. Then I shall go back happy.
You will be careful, darling, won't you?
Well, quickly then. No, you must go now. If you insist on seeing me, it must be in town. Though what good it will do, I can't imagine. It will only make us unhappy.
Bless you for that, us.
Have you found a job?
There are none.
Don't worry.
Goodbye.
It'll be better after the election.
Well, at least she let me kiss her.
On Saturday night before the election, the coffee house, the oldest club in the world, was almost deserted. Tony Croom, back in town after his brief meeting with Claire, needed distraction. In a matter of weeks, his savings would be gone. To the ignominy of unrequited love would then be added the shame of penury.
Excuse me? Yes. Aren't you Sir Lawrence Mond?
That has been my lifelong conviction.
Then, sir, I met your niece, Lady Corvin, coming home from Ceylon. She said you will remember here. My name is Croom.
Ah, I probably knew your father.
Yes, he put me down at birth. I believe I'm about the youngest in the club.
So you met Claire. How was she?
All right, I think, sir.
Yes, well, let's sit down and talk. Cigar?
Thank you, sir. I have my pipe.
An attractive young woman, my niece.
I thought her delightful.
Do you know her husband, Sir Gerald Corvin?
No.
Clever fellow. What were you doing in Ceylon, Mr. Croom?
Running a tea plantation. Unfortunately, they took up economy, amalgamated three estates into one, and I wasn't wanted anymore.
Yes, well, I'm afraid it's a common story these days. They say overproduction is the cause of the present difficulties, but that certainly doesn't apply to us here in England. What we need is a five-year plan. Lessen our imports, increase home production, and at the end of 5 years, our trade would be balanced.
You think there will be a recovery, sir?
Well, so long as we can agree amongst ourselves. Problem is, it's not an outside enemy we're fighting.
My own battle's rather simpler. I need a job.
Hmm. Any ideas?
Well, I'm pretty good with horses. I thought possibly I might get into a training stable, or with a breeder. But I'll have a shot at anything.
Yes, well, I might be able to help you there, you know. My cousin, Jack Muscombe, breeds livestock. He's got a bee in his bonnet about Arab mares. Matter of fact, he's got some coming over about now. It's just possible he might want someone.
It would be frightfully kind of you, sir. I've had Arab polo ponies.
Well, I'm always sympathetic to a man who rarely wants a job and can't find one. We'll have to get this election over first, though. If we don't rout the socialists, horse breeders will have to turn their stock into potted meat. Imagine having the dam of a Derby winner between brown bread and butter for your tea. Real gentleman's relish,
Ah, time, Dinny. Turn the thing on.
Yes, awkward.
On the evening of the election, which all the newspapers agreed was to make history, the General Sir Conway and Lady Charles, their daughters Dinny and Tara, and the General's sister Lady Mont, sat in the drawing room at Conderford, listening to the portable wireless. A present from Fleur. Patriotism, divorced from thought of vested interest, governed, as they supposed, their mood. If they made a mistake in so thinking, quite a number of other Britons were making it too.
This is the first election result. Hornsey. Conservative elected. No change. Conservative 18,723. Liberal National, 8,231. Labour, 5,965. Conservative majority, 10,492.
Where is Hornsey?
Isle of Wight?
Middlesex, Aunt Em.
Oh, yes. I was thinking of Southsea.
Can't you coax it,
Dinny? Floor does something to ours with a penny.
It's always like this, Aunt Em.
Elected. Conservative gain from Labour.
By 10 o'clock, three highly satisfactory results had been announced.
Oh, look, do you think dogs have political feelings? Bosch is looking quite animated.
Dinny ran her hand over the dog, symbol of so much gained and lost in her life. 16 months since Wilfred disappeared.
I will forget him. I will.
Only once had she broken her resolve never to speak of him. From his publisher, Compson Grice, she had learned that he was in Bangkok. He was well and had begun to write.
Oh, it's infectious, isn't it? I feel quite celebratory.
There's never been such a majority at Condaford.
Eustace Dornford, KC, MP. They're saying he'll go far.
And you, Claire dear, as his secretary-to-be, shall go with him.
Oh, dear, I do hate asking for things.
Do you want me to?
Would you?
Wait here. I'll go and congratulate him.
That's better. We can hear ourselves talking here.
I only wanted to congratulate you. My sister and I are awfully glad you've won.
I'd like to thank your sister for canvassing. Is she with you?
She's outside.
She worked hard.
She enjoyed it. Matter of fact, she made me feel quite inadequate. I'm afraid canvassing isn't something I can do.
You do other things, Miss Gerald.
Mr. Dornford, I wanted to ask you...
Anything, Miss Gerald. I'm always at your service.
Oh, well, my sister. She's at a loose end. Badly wants something to do. You don't think... Well, I don't suppose she'd be any use to you as a secretary, would she? She does know the county pretty well, and she can type and speak French.
Why don't we go and see her?
You mean...
I think it's a splendid idea, Miss Gerald. From what I've seen of your sister, she's exactly what I'm looking for. And I can't thank you enough for suggesting it.
Oh.
Darling Claire, your note has perked me up no end.
The news that Claire would now be living and working in town reached Tony at the end of another fruitless day's search for a job. He had already heard from Sir Lawrence that Jack Muscombe would not be wanting anyone until the spring.
Heaven knows what I'll do when my pouch is empty. No dole for this child, unfortunately.
Claire had written that she'd be staying at her aunt's house in Mount Street until such time as she found a place of her own.
Your uncle has been very kind, and I shall simply have to call and thank him. Look out for me about 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Tell me about Ceylon, Mr. Craven.
Polly, be quiet.
Croom, Auntie, but you should call him Tony. It isn't his name, but everybody does.
Did you know my niece out there?
No, we met on the ship home.
Ah, ship. Of course.
What's the matter, Aunt Em?
Something I remembered. Shan't be long.
Tony, behave.
Surely that's what she went for.
Aunt Em has shown extraordinary kindness. I'm not about to abuse it. If you and I are going to be pals, Tony, it's got to be platonic.
Oh, God.
There's lots of time, you know. One day, perhaps.
I'll agree to anything, so long as I can see you.
You say that now, but if I gave myself to you...
If I hadn't been married, you'd have waited cheerfully enough. Think of it like that.
Unfortunately, I can't. For who could?
I see. I'm fruit. Not blossom.
Don't.
Tainted by physiology.
Is that all you think it is?
I told you it wouldn't work.
Don't say that. Look, Claire, I'll be anything you want. And if I'm not always as cheerful as a bird, you must forgive me.
You can start by helping me decorate my rooms, if you like.
You found somewhere, then?
2 Melton Mews off Malmesbury Square. I move in tomorrow.
Thou shalt not commit adultery... Thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's wife.
Can you distemper walls?
I did my bungalow in Ceylon.
Good. We'll have to work in the evenings, though, because of my job.
Rules of the game. But what is the game? That's what no one tells you.
Can you come tomorrow evening at 6:30?
Yes.
Splendid. But remember, no importunities. Life is real. Life is earnest.
Physiology. Oh, Claire.
As Tony walked away, he tried to fix in his mind an image of his beloved. Every detail of her person, from her dark shingled hair to her glassy kid toe, he recalled lovingly.
I say.
I beg your pardon.
Look where you're going.
So preoccupied was he failed to register the man with whom he had collided so close to Sir Lawrence Mont's front door. Had he turned round, you would have seen, contemplating him curiously, a man of middle height and alert bearing. The expression in his cat-like eyes and the slight contraction of his lips might have been a smile.
Well, my dear, we meet again.
You caught the next boat.
I can't have you making us a laughingstock.
What do you want?
You. I've come to take you back with me.
You don't imagine I'll come.
Oh, don't be absurd.
Let me go. I told my aunt I'd ring if I needed help. You don't want me to do that, do you?
Oh, but this is ridiculous.
I'm afraid you've had a wasted journey.
I don't think so.
Do you think I'd have gone if I hadn't been in earnest?
My dear, you have my apology and my word against anything of that sort again.
Good of you.
It was only an experiment. Some women adore it, if not at the time.
You are a beast.
And beauty married me. Oh, come, Claire. You're a woman of the world. You can fix your own conditions.
And trust you to keep them. No, Jerry, I know you too well.
Might I remind you that you are my wife?
Am I likely to forget?
Look at me, Claire. I may be a beast, as you say, but I'm not a humbug. I don't trade on my position or on the sanctity of marriage, but I have an important job to do, and I can't play about with it.
I'm not coming back to you, Jerry.
Do you expect me to divorce you?
You have no reason.
So you would naturally say.
And mean.
There was a young man leaving this house as I arrived. Name and estate?
Tony Croom.
I won't stand for another man having you, Claire. Did you hear me?
Yes.
I meant it.
I could see that.
Oh, you're a stony little devil.
I wish I had been.
Oh, look. I'm staying at the Bristol. Be sensible, there's a darling. And come to me there. We'll start again.
There are some things that can't be done to me, and you have done them.
I've said they shan't be done again.
Oh, for God's sake, can't you understand? You killed all the feeling I had for you.
Then you must understand me. Either you come back to me, or I divorce you. Don't imagine I'll do the decent thing and let you divorce me.
Corvin's back, you say? I don't know. These days, parents have to stand on the mat and trust what they can hear through the keyhole.
I'm going to go up, Dad.
Hmm?
Claire might need me. She's in her diggings now.
Melton Mews? It's not a slum, is it?
No, Mother. It's what's called a charming backwater. It's only 10 minutes from Uncle Lawrence and Aunt Em.
Oh, that's handy.
Tell Claire. Just give her our love. One never knows where one is in these matrimonial things.
Oh, I shouldn't have come this way. This park holds too many memories.
One more river. One more river to cross.
The river. My dream. It keeps coming back to me. Oh, Wilfred, why can't I forget you?
Oh, you've made it look quite wonderful, Claire. Where do you sleep?
On that couch. It's quite comfy. There's a little bath dressing room next door.
I don't know how you've managed it. You've been here less than a week.
Tony Croom's been helping me. He distempered these walls.
Mother and father are nervous, darling.
They would be.
Naturally, don't you think?
I've talked to Uncle Lawrence. It seems I can only get a divorce by having Jerry watched. I'm not prepared to do that. It's too revolting.
Then you'll let him divorce you?
He has no cause.
What about Tony Croom, Claire?
He's on probation. So long as he behaves, I like to see him.
If it were known he came here, it would be enough, wouldn't it?
Enough for the men of the world, yes. And that's what juries are.
Then don't you think, while Jerry's here...
No. I think I'm safer while he's here than when he goes. If I don't go back with him, that's when he'll have me watched.
Come out and have dinner with me.
Sorry, darling, I can't. I'm dining with Tony.
Which reminds me, it's time I changed.
I won't play the elder sister. Claire's recklessness is nothing new.
Keep a lookout for Tony for me, will you, Dinny?
Right.
You mustn't worry about me, you know. I'm not about to do anything foolish.
Oh, God.
Believe it or not, I don't actually want to hurt Jerry. He's very able, you know. He'll go a long way.
Claire, it's him. He's standing outside the door.
Tony?
No, Jerry.
Oh, hell.
What shall we do?
I won't see him.
Shall I go? Well, he'll have seen the light. He'll know someone's here.
Could you take him away with you, Dinny? And you to meet Tony at 7.
Well, I can try.
I'm sorry to do this to you. God knows how he found this place. I'm afraid it's going to be a persecution.
So, she won't see me.
If you like to put it that way.
It was hard for Dinny to avoid her brother-in-law's gaze.
I must be careful.
For in his company, she did not feel towards him as she did in his absence. Jerry Corvin had charm.
Claire's been giving me bad marks, I suppose.
We won't discuss it, please. Whatever she feels, I do too.
Naturally. Your loyalty is proverbial. But consider, Dinny, how tantalizing she is. Besides, I've always liked experimenting.
This is my sister, you know.
Listen, Dinny. I'm a sensualist. I make no secret of it. Sex is naturally aberrational. If anyone tells you it isn't, don't believe them. But the worst is over as far as Claire's concerned. Or at least it will be once we've settled down again. Marriage is very much a go-as-you-please affair.
You mean you'll do your experimenting on someone else?
Almost embarrassing, this conversation, isn't it? Now, what I want you to grasp is that I'm two men. One, and it's the one that matters, has his work to do and means to do it. Claire should stick to that man because he'll give her a life in which she won't rust.
Where in all this does love come?
Perhaps it doesn't. Marriage is composed of mutual interest and desire. The first increases with the years, the latter fades. That ought to be exactly what Claire wants.
I don't see it that way.
You haven't tried yourself out, my dear.
No, and on those lines I trust I never may. I should dislike alternation between commerce and vice.
Well, I admire your bluntness. Dinny, you ought to influence her, you know. She's making a great mistake.
I think it was you who made the mistake. If you do certain things to certain horses, you're never on terms with them again.
I'll not let her divorce me, Dinny. If she won't come back to me, she must watch out.
3 days later, Sir Lawrence and Lady Mont held a private dinner at their home in Mount Street. Dinny was still a guest in their house. It was no accident, therefore, that Lady Mont's invitation had extended beyond the family to Eustace Dornford.
Dinny, they tell me Mr. Dornford won the long jump at Oxford. Is that good?
I should think it's highly desirable, Aunt Em.
The other guests were to be Claire and Adrian Cheryl.
Well, you're very good, Alfred. It's a pleasure.
Dinny, I've just been telling Adrian. Some of old Forsyth's pictures are to be lent for the French exhibition next year. You must come up for it.
What was Fleur's father like, Uncle Lawrence? Was he a nice man?
Yeah. Well, nice isn't the word. Straight, careful. He wouldn't have been happy in these times.
I think Fleur still misses him.
Diana's so sorry she can't be here, Dinny. These wretched measles have confined her to quarters.
I remember when Kit had measles. Fleur was in purdah for weeks. Oh, that'll be Mr. Dornford. With Claire, I hope. Come, Lawrence.
Huh? Oh, yes.
Dinny, confess. You've come about this business of Claire's, haven't you?
There's more than just her happiness at stake, Uncle Adrian.
That bad?
He's a beast.
But you don't mean he's mentally abnormal?
No, saner than you or I, I'm afraid. He wants his own way, regardless of other people.
Mm.
And when he can't get it, he bites.
Yes.
Mr. Dornford, you know my niece, I believe.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Dornford? You didn't bring Claire with you?
She left the temple at 6:30. I imagine she'd be here by now.
Well, we won't wait. Bloor can serve the drinks.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Dawnford. It's been an uncomfortable evening for you. You see, Claire has split from her husband, and he's come over to try and get her back.
That's why you've been worried. I sense there was something else.
If she'd been delayed, she'd have telephoned.
Are you going to look for him?
Yes.
Then might I come with you? I'd like to help.
Oh, that's kind of you, but perhaps my sister wouldn't like it.
I understand. Any time I can help, please let me know.
Will you wait for me, please?
I should have let Mr. Dawnford come.
The mews by night was dark and private.
Like a river. The river in my dream.
One more river. One more river to cross.
The curtains are drawn. Does that mean she's in? I can't tell whether there's a light or not. She can't be in. She would answer, surely.
Baffled and disquieted, Denny hurried back to the waiting taxi.
The Bristol Hotel, please. Could you find out for me, please, if my brother-in-law, Sir Gerald Corvin, is in the hotel?
He's not in his suite, madam. I can try the public rooms.
I'll not let her divorce me, Denny. If she won't come back to me, she must watch out.
Somehow there must be a happy ending for Claire.
I'm sorry, madam. Sir Gerald Corvin doesn't appear to be in the hotel.
There was nothing for Denny to do but return to Mount Street.
I don't know, Denny. I've tried his club. He's not there.
What can we do?
Go to bed. Start again in the morning. Personally, I think it's time the people of this country were warned against marriage. It was all very well under Victoria, but these days it only seems to work in cases where neither party has any individuality to speak of.
I walked over from Mount Street. I couldn't sleep.
Did you ring the bell before?
Yes.
Denny's eyes went to the couch. It was in disorder.
Yes, Jerry was here. He'd not been gone 10 minutes. He was waiting outside when I got back from the temple. After all, he's come a long way.
Does that mean you're going back with him?
God, no. I was an idiot to let him in. I don't know why I did. As soon as we were alone, he...
Do you want me to stay?
No. I'm all right. It must all seem very funny to you.
No, Claire. It seems to me tragic.
Thin eyes. Oh, poor dear Claire.
So exhausted was Denny, she didn't at first notice the young man standing at the entrance to the mews.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Mr. Croom, isn't it?
Miss Cheryl, have you been at your sister's?
Yes.
Is she all right? She was saying last night that man was over here. It worries me terribly.
She's all right, Mr. Croom.
I don't mind telling you I'm head over heels in love with her. I simply cannot stand her being in danger from that man.
I think the only danger to Claire, Mr. Croom, would be if it were known that you...
Have you ever been in love, Miss Cheryl?
Yes.
Well, then you know.
Oh, yes, Mr. Croom, I know.
Ready for the guy?
Nothing matters, so long as I keep my self-respect.
Friday, November the 5th, found Claire hurrying from her work at the temple to catch the train to Carnarvon. Denny had told her of her meeting with Tony Croom.
Poor boy. If he knew.
Ready for the guy? Remember the poor old guy, lady? Oh, much obliged, lady. Ta.
2 whole days of safety. Jerry won't ready look for me guy. At Condiford.
Remember the poor old guy.
But to a husband with but 1 week to encompass his desire, the resumption of the society of his wife, 2 days is too long a time to be idle.
I'm sorry, dear. It's Jerry. He's with your father.
Jerry, here?
Well, he'll want to see you.
Poor mother, she doesn't understand.
You say he's a beast, darling. Are you sure you don't just mean the beast that's in most men?
Oh, no, Mother. I'm not that easily upset.
Jerry and I have been going into this, Claire.
Hello, Claire.
He admits you've much on your side, but he's given his word he won't offend you again. I know the old idea.
He expects me to go back, doesn't he? It was all the men in the family want.
Certain vows. You know I only want what's best for you.
And Jerry has convinced you that's going back to him.
Well, what is going to happen, Claire? It's only been 18 months. Are you going to live apart? Well, that's not fair to you or to him.
Fairer to us both than living together would be.
You say that now.
I'm not going back, Dad, and that's an end to it.
During the silence that followed, Jerry Corbin's eyes rested on his wife. Neither party flinched.
Very well. I will make other arrangements. Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Claire.
Goodbye.
Has it occurred to you, Claire, that in getting out of one hole, you may be stepping into another?
Did he tell you he used his riding whip on me?
What?
It wasn't my real reason, but it put the finishing touch.
By God!
Of course. Facts. That's what men need. Now he can see it as an insult to his flesh and blood.
He told me he spent the evening with you the other day. Is that true?
He practically forced himself in.
The ruffian!
Would you say that if it was someone else's daughter?
This puts an entirely different complexion on things.
Yes. You'll be on my side now. Sorry to hurt you, Dad. Yet it was all right for Hubert to flog that muleteer.
Noel Coward's cavalcade. They're calling it the play of the century.
Tony's already seen it. He absolutely swears by it.
I wish he wasn't in London, Claire. Now that Jerry's gone.
You're as bad as Aunt Em. I've had to promise her I absolutely won't kick over for a year.
Gratifying.
I mean to keep it, too. Aunt Em was right to ask me. Think of it, Dinny, a whole year's holiday from everything.
What does Tony Croom think about it?
Poor Tony. But he knew from the beginning how things were. Luckily, he won't be in London much longer. He's going to take charge of some mares for Jack Muscombe.
Jack Muscombe. Oh, that's someone I never want to see again. He'll be at Royston, then?
No, Bablock Hive. Mr. Muscombe has a separate establishment there.
If I hadn't gone to Royston, would Wilfred be with me now?
Dinny, I don't like it when you look like that. You make me think you might end up religious.
Get thee to a nunnery.
Seriously, Ducky, I wish I could see more of the old Eve in you. In my opinion, you ought to be a mother.
When doctors find a way without preliminaries.
You know, you've only to crook your little finger for Eustace Dawnford to fall on his knees to you. This expedition tonight is entirely his idea.
I'm glad we're sitting on our own. Is that Dawnford's doing?
He wants to be alone with Dinny. Hmm.
I hope you're going to like this, Claire. It's frightfully patriotic.
As one scene followed another, England's past began to unfold before them. The Boer War, the death of Queen Victoria, the sinking of the Titanic.
I can just remember the Titanic. Awful, the waste in the world.
Have you come up against much?
Yes.
You don't care to talk about it?
No.
That honeymoon couple on the deck, it didn't look to me as if their love would last. They were eating each other like sugar.
Don't you believe in love lasting, Claire?
Not passion, anyway.
The press had called it the picture of the generation.
The war must have been awful.
One got sort of exalted.
Did the feeling last?
In a way. Does that seem rather horrible to you?
I've heard my brother say something of the kind.
Well, it's a cliché to say it's the biggest thing that's happened in one's life.
Do you still feel that?
I have, up till now. But, Dinny, I must tell you while I have a chance. I'm in love with you. I fell in love with you the first time I saw you. It's been getting deeper ever since. No, don't say anything, please. But think about it now and then, will you?
Taxi!
Thank
Taxi!
You awfully for taking me, Mr. Dawnford. I shan't forget this play.
Nor what I said to you, I hope.
It was sweet of you. But I'm afraid the aloe only blooms once in 100 years.
Here you are.
Hello.
Tony was beginning to think you hadn't liked it.
Christmas at Carterford was a family affair. At various times came Hilary Cheryl, his wife and daughter, Monica, Adrian and Diana, with Diana's two children now recovered from the measles, and Sir Lionel and Lady Alison. The things being what they were, the talk centred on schemes to make money.
The 3P plan, Dad. Pigs, poultry and potatoes. Uncle Lawrence swears it will get us out of debt.
And on the conviction that with such an overwhelming Conservative majority, 1932 was bound to be important.
I've enjoyed this Christmas immensely, Mr. Cheryl. It was kind of your family to include me.
Oh, I'm afraid their motives weren't entirely disinterested, Mr. Dawnford. They wanted to secure your adherence to the 3P plan.
Are things really so bad for the General?
Well, they wouldn't be if he'd considered breaking up the estate, but of course he'd never sanctioned that.
Your niece never seems to stop working. Doesn't she ever think of herself?
No more than reason.
She looks to me sometimes as if she'd been through something pretty bad. Would you mind awfully telling me what it was? This isn't curiosity. I'm in love with her. I don't want to butt in and hurt her through ignorance.
Well, she was terribly in love the year before last. It came to a tragic end.
Death?
No. I won't tell you the exact story, but the man had done something that placed him, or at all events he thought so, outside the pale. Rather than involve Dinny, he went off to the Far East. It was a complete cut. Dinny has never spoken of it since. But I'm afraid she'll never forget.
Hey, goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, dear. Goodbye,
dear. Goodbye, dear.
On the Monday after New Year's Day, the party broke up. Dinny, exhausted from her labours, said her goodbyes and went to her room to rest.
Give me your hand, Dinny. That's it. One more river. One more river to cross. One more river. One more river.
Wilfred!
One more river.
Wilfred!
One more river.
I will.
Darling.
Happy New Year.
For Tony Croom, about to take up residence at Bablock Hythe, a sight of Claire was like a reprieve to a dying man.
I have missed you.
1932. What will it bring, I wonder?
Are you talking personally or politically?
I never talk personally with you, Tony.
So, what's it to be? A film? A walk? A chaste cup of tea? You don't mind if I stare, do you? The Public Enemy. It's a gangster movie. Or would you prefer a musical?
Oh, no more musicals, Tony. They make me restless.
And that makes two of us.
Oh, now, Tony, you promise.
Exemplary behaviour for a year. It's a long time, Claire.
But exemplary would not have been the word chosen to describe the young couple's behaviour by the shortish man in horn-rimmed spectacles following at a discreet distance behind them.
Babes in the wood. Don't they know what the world's like?
This is Mr. Chain's fifth day on the job. An employee of the Polteed Agency, he regarded himself as a capable sleuth. So far, he'd seen nothing he could describe as conclusive. But the evidence he had collected, he considered highly satisfactory.
Nothing for so long.
Quiet as the grave.
But he has retired.
It was in the papers.
For Mr. Chain, a visit to the cinema was a welcome respite. Most of his time till now had been spent sheltering in the doorway of the house opposite number 2, Melton Mews.
Holding hands. Excellent.
Mr. Chain made a note in his pocketbook.
You don't look well, Dinny. Are you sure I can't buy you something to eat?
I'm fine, Uncle Adrian. I'd just like to walk for a bit.
On your own?
Do you mind very much?
Well, my dear Dinny, I don't mind anything so long as it's right for you.
It was not the sight of her sister with Tony Croom that had unhinged Dinny so much as the sensation, coming out of Burlington Arcade, that her past had come fluttering back to her.
These streets, they haunt me still. Cork Street. I'll go and see Stack. Nothing can hurt more than this eternal not knowing. He looks exactly the same, Stack. He might almost be here.
Thank you, miss. I like to think so.
Have you any news?
Oh, not to say news, miss, but I understand from his bank he's still in Siam. His lordship was here not long ago, and he said Mr. Desert was up a river somewhere.
A river?
The name escapes me. Something with a Y in it, as I remember.
One more river. One more river to cross.
I'm very glad to have seen you, Stack. Thank you for letting me come here again. The river. Always the river.
Dinny! Hello. I've just been to the French exhibition. Have you seen it? It's divine.
Hello, Flair.
I saw Claire there with a young man in tow.
It's not what you think, Claire.
She's making a mistake. She should stick to Jerry Corbin. He'll go far.
Claire doesn't care about such things.
Well, she cares about money.
It's a complete break, Flair. It's no good trying to explain.
My dear, there's nothing to explain. He's hurt her in some way, as of course he would. But that doesn't mean she can't have a life of her own. These days, that's expected. Would you settle for that?
My case is exceptional.
Michael is such a dear. Besides, there are the children.
You're such a fraud, Flair. You don't practice what you preach.
Well, don't let's squabble. Michael's been singing the praises of your new Member of Parliament. I wish you'd marry him, Dinny dear. You'd look very nice in the veil walking down the village aisle.
So, this is your new car.
More old than new, I'm afraid. But you'll do 50.
Where are you taking me?
I thought you might like to see where I work.
Isn't that rather a long way?
We've got all day, haven't we? Not a car in sight.
There's a motorbike. I wonder why it doesn't pass us. He's been tailing us for ages.
This is the longest time we've spent together without a break.
Now, Tony, don't get soppy.
Piece of luck having this place to ourselves.
Not quite to ourselves.
I think it's our friend on the motorbike.
2 for 1, please.
I was impressed with Jack Muscombe's stables. An ideal position.
I wish you'd let me show you my cottage. The conversion will be finished soon.
I don't think that would have been wise.
Sleepy?
A little. It's been a lovely day, Tony.
Everything looks different in the dark, doesn't it?
We are on the right road.
There's a village ahead. I'll stop and ask.
Having learned from a passing motorcyclist that they were indeed on the road to Henley, Tony and Claire resumed their journey.
How far do you think?
To Henley? Oh, about 5 miles.
Poor dear, you've got to drive all this way back again.
Damn! Oh, my lights have gone.
Your lights are out, sir.
Battery must be used up.
Shall I get out and walk ahead?
No, it's pitch dark. I might run over you. We'll just creep on and trust the luck.
It's an adventure.
I remember this wood. It goes on for 2 or 3 miles.
Follow his lights, Tony.
Oh, blast. Lost him.
Pull her off the road and let's think. There must be something we can do.
Tell you what. We'll walk into Henley. It's not far. I'll get you to an hotel, borrow a torch, and come back here. With a torch, I'll be able to get her to a garage.
Why don't we just stay here and see the sunrise? I've always wanted to spend the night in a car.
You mean you'd trust me?
Don't be old-fashioned, Tony.
She can't love me, or she'd never take it so coolly. I'll just get out and see if anyone can see us.
There's never a moon when you want one, is there?
I can't see a thing.
I wonder what Aunt Em would say if she could see us.
Now I've lost the car. Well, don't stop. At least we've got a rug.
Aren't you glad it's a two-seater?
Don't, Claire.
I'm sorry. Forgive me, Tony. But I did promise.
Do you mind my pipe?
Of course not.
My shoulder's here if you want it.
Perhaps that motorcyclist will send someone.
I hope not.
Oh. Oh. If you don't mind, I will put my head on your shoulder.
I'll never sleep. I can smell her hair. How could she be so matter-of-fact? Oh, she's asleep. How precious she is. I could never hurt her.
And so it was for an hour and more, till Tony fell asleep too.
Oh, heavens. Have I been asleep?
Yes, poor dear. I've had a perfect night. Just a little achy in the legs. What time is it?
It's 6:30. Oh, pins and needles. Mm. Oh.
Let's get out and stretch.
And so it's over.
Was it so terrible? Don't let's stop for breakfast. I'll make us some at my place.
Whatever happens, I'll have passed a night with her.
How are you feeling?
Better now. The blood's flowing again.
Poor Tony. Last night wasn't fair on him. We mustn't do anything like this again, Tony. Too near the Hambone altogether.
We didn't mean to do it.
To the pure, all things are not pure.
No. Blast them.
I wonder what my employer would have to say if he knew I'd spent the night in a car with you.
Much the same as mine, I imagine.
By 10 o'clock, Claire was seated at her desk in Eustace Dawnford's chambers. Bathed, changed, and breakfasted, she showed no outward sign of the previous night's unorthodoxy.
Ah, Lady Corbin. Mr. Dawnford said to tell you he'd be going straight from the courts to the house.
Do you ever feel low-spirited, George?
What I miss here, Lady Corbin, is my dog.
I'm sure Mr. Dawnford would let you have him.
Imagine if he bit a solicitor. Besides, I don't fancy Mr. Dawnford. He'll be residential here much longer.
Oh, why?
He's looking for a house. I have an idea he'd like to marry.
Marry? But who?
Surely you know that, Lady Corbin. Your sister.
Dinny and Mr. Dawnford. If only it were true. Though why I should want anyone to marry.
Ah! Lady Corbin! I thought it was you. Lawrence told me you were over. Remember me? Jack Muscombe?
Of course! I come here to watch the horses. Riding is a passion of mine.
And it's one we share.
I miss it when I'm not at Condorford.
Ah, yes. How is your sister?
Well, thank you.
Oh, an acquaintance of yours, going to look after my Arab mares.
Well, that must be Tony Croom.
Yes, nice young chap. Keen as mustard.
I rode an Arab in Ceylon.
Ah, then we must get you down to see the mares.
Somewhere near Oxford, isn't it?
Yes, yes, indeed. Bye, Lady Corbin. Pleasant to have seen you.
That was close. I really must try and give Tony up.
3 weeks passed. Claire, resolved to be more careful in future, saw almost nothing of Tony.
6 o'clock? Who'd call at this hour? Yes?
Facing her was a shortish man in horn-rimmed spectacles.
Don't I know you?
Lady Corvin?
Yes.
I have this for you.
From his blue overcoat, Mr. Train produced a document. Claire read the words.
In the High Court of Justice, Probate, Divorce and Admiralty Division. In the matter of the petition of Sir Gerald Corvin.
I'm sorry, my lady.
But this is monstrous. I've done nothing. The point is, Tony, we're innocent. What are we going to do about it?
I shall do whatever you want.
I have a feeling I shall have to do what my people want.
God, to think that if we defend and win, you'll be tied to him.
And if we don't, you'll be ruined.
That can only make me bankrupt.
What about your job?
Well, I don't see why that should...
I saw Jack Buscombe the other day. He didn't look to me like the kind of man who'd turn a blind eye.
God, what a coil.
Did they serve the same document on you?
Yes.
I'm going down to Condorford tomorrow. I think you'd better come too. Whatever's done now must be done with open eyes.
I'll drive over in the afternoon, shall I?
That would be best.
May I kiss you?
That would bring the count to 4. And we have to tell the exact truth. Better kiss my hand. No one minds that.
You say nothing happened. Not on the boat, not in your rooms, not on the night you spent alone together in the car.
I've told you the truth, Dad.
Yet you say this young man's in love with you.
If Claire says nothing happened, nothing happened, Dad.
What time will Mr. Croom be here?
Any time now.
Does he think you'll be believed?
No. The only thing that matters, surely, is for Claire to get free.
I'm not sure that is the only thing, Dinny.
If you're worrying about my name...
Yours and the family's, darling.
Well, I must say, I'm loath to lie down under an accusation of this sort.
You believe me, then?
Of course he believes you, darling. We both do.
Thank you.
Trouble is, I don't see how you're going to convince a jury. Not once you've admitted spending a night alone together in a car.
Perhaps we shouldn't defend. If we don't, it will just go through and hardly be noticed. If we do, it will make a sensation. Can't you see the papers? Couples spend night in car.
Well, I think we must wait and hear what the lawyers have to say. Lawrence seems to think a lot of Kingston's. Fleur's father was a member there.
What about Mr. Dornford?
He doesn't practice in the divorce court, Mother. Besides, he's a Catholic.
I'll come up with you tomorrow evening, Claire. You might need me.
It's Tony.
Yes, well, leave this to me. Dinny, will you show Mr. Croom into my study?
Yes, of course I will, Dad.
I'm sorry about all this, Mother. Virtue is not its own reward.
Wisdom is.
We were fools. I see that now.
Your father told me about the whip, Claire. I've never seen him so angry. I think he'll feel, whatever the drawbacks, that you must defend.
I know. I feel it too. How dare Jerry treat me like this? But I couldn't mention the whip in court, Mother. I have some pride.
Well, Mr. Croom, your version is substantially the same as my daughter's. I don't suppose you put your heads together, did you?
Of course not, sir.
Then I take it you're ready to defend the action.
If you think there's a chance of our being believed.
What is your financial position?
£400 a year from my job. Otherwise, nothing, sir.
I see.
I'm awfully sorry about all this. But I can't say I'm sorry I'm in love with Claire, because it wouldn't be true. I love her terribly.
What exactly do you mean by love?
I know what you're asking, sir. But if it was only desire, I couldn't have stood that night in the car.
Thank you, Mr. Croom. I was hoping that would be your answer.
The family retired early to bed. Ginny restless and troubled on her sister's account, was the last to fall asleep.
Wilfred. I can't see you, Wilfred.
One more river. One more river to cross. One more river.
In episode 22 of the Foresight Chronicles, Galsworthy was Dirk Bogard. Dinny Cheryl was Sophie Thompson. Sir Lawrence Mont, Paul Daneman. Lady Mont, Dorothy Tutin. And Fleur Foresight, Amanda Redman. Sir Gerald Corvin was played by James Warwick. Claire Corvin, Miranda Foster. Eustace Dornford, David Yelland. Wilfred Desert, Philip Sully. Tony Croom, Matthew Solon. Adrian Cheryl, John Moffat. And General Sir Conway Cheryl, Garard Green. Mary Allen was Lady Elizabeth Cheryl. Aubrey Woods, Jack Muscombe. Elizabeth Kelly, Betty. Danny Schiller, Stack. Stephen Garlick, Mr. Chain. David Bannerman, George. And Michael Kilgareth, the radio announcer. Other parts were played by Leonard Fenton and members of the cast. Technical presentation was by Peter Novis, Roger Daines, and Hilary Carruthers. The production assistants were Catherine Moses and Joanna Gill. The director was Anthony Cornish.